there could be a point in 2 years where we bring in something drastic and we just ruin footy for a couple of years and we're going to take it out again.
I know Whitey wasn't overly wrapped with the Thursday night footy, but I think it's the best time slot in footy. The
beauty about our club is we rock up to training every day, and training's so fun. Everyone wants to train.
The overwhelming feeling is unsatisfaction, and purely because we were so close to winning the whole thing.
It's an opposition coach who presents every single week, but in the end, we play our brand of football the same. Fuck. Yeah. They're just finding work for someone.
Your ticket into the heart of football. Welcome to the Breakfast Club's Inner Sanctum.
Welcome, everyone, to the Inner Sanctum recap from the Breakfast Club for this week. We start off back on Tuesday morning with Max Gawn, the Melbourne ruckman, in for the final time this season. The D's have had a very long year. Unfortunately, on the weekend, they went down to Collingwood, and Max, well, he had a new role on the weekend. He had to tag Brody Grundy. It was completely different for Max, and he spoke about that in his interview. They're looking ahead this weekend to the Sydney Swans. They kickstart round 22 at the MCG on Friday night. Max spoke about all that and more with Daniel Harford, John Hastings, and Scotty Gullen.
It's a grand old flag, it's a high-flying flag, it's the emblem for me and for you. It's the emblem of the team we love, the team of the red and the blue. Every heart beats true for the red and the blue, and we sing this song to you.
Well, it's the last time we'll have him in the Inner Sanctum this year, so it's an emotional time for all of us, and no Jaffel.
Yeah.
I would have thought it would have been a given.
It was pretty clear at the end of last episode to bring in a Jaffel, wasn't it? It's poor for me. I've had a couple of things on my mind.
What have you had in your mind, big fella?
Trying to win a game. It's getting harder and harder, but there's still two games to go, so hopefully we can win one on the way home.
Is it eating at you, speaking of Jaffels, more than you thought it might?
Yeah, mind the pun there. I've been coming in here fortnightly the whole year, and it's noticeably getting harder to talk about how disappointing the season's been. So the one on the weekend was as irritating as I probably got. That was a little arch rival that knocked us out of the finals in 2017, and we tried to get up for it. And but Friday night footy, it's... Not many times Melbourne get a chance to play Friday night, and will probably be taken away from us again next year, so we'll make the most of it when we can get it, but yeah, it's exciting this week.
I was going to say, Max, are you ready for it just to put the season to bed, or you still want to get something out of the last couple of games?
Yeah, I'm not ready to end the season yet, because I'm not happy with it, so I don't think I'll be happy with it if we won the next two, though, so I think I'm going to finish quite miserable, but no, I'm not ready for it to end. And I had a little week off there about 5 weeks ago, which was a win as well, so I haven't won for a while, but... So I'm feeling relatively fresh as well.
So we were talking about utilities, and Jared Ruffhead is one of the great ones, but you've got another string to your bow.
I have added one.
Tagger.
Yes.
Explain how this happened. What did Goody say, and your reaction, and how you did it?
Well, Queen's birthday game. Myself and Brody both probably shook each other's hand at the start and said, see you at the end. And
that is good ruckmanship.
Yeah, there was a lot of times I was marking the ball down back and then kicking it straight to him on the wing. And Goody came to me at halftime in that game and said, I just want you to, Grundy's getting the ball down the line a lot. It's hurting us play a little bit tighter. So I did. And then he said, obviously, during the week that he thought that worked and he wants to go a little bit tighter throughout the whole game. And the only tag on the ground would be me. So... I was looking forward to it. As a leader, it's one of the roles that you kind of really want to get done and show that whatever the coach says you can do. And although it is hard to tag a ruck at times because a lot of their disposals come around the clearances, it was quite fun. I
learned a lot. Did you have a conversation with him? Did you say, mate, I'm going everywhere?
Wearing you like a glove today, bro.
He doesn't give me much. No, oh. I try and talk to him, but he's relatively switched on to the game, but... this is probably a selfish thing that I've got out of it, but I learnt a lot for next time I'll play him.
Yeah. Just on him or playing out that role?
Both. I was very negative in terms of how I played So playing that role in the future, I'll try and Kane Corn style and still get 30, 40-odd disposals as well. But I'll try and be a little bit more positive about the role and move forward and whatnot. But and about him as well. Obviously, I was able to watch him very, very closely, so I know a few things for next time.
So was there times where you thought, I should be over there, the ball's going to go there, I could get it, but no, he's staying here, so I'm staying within reach of him?
Yeah, 100%. I've got new respect for taggers because it's decisions at every single contest.
Yeah.
I had to sort of weigh up whether it was a chance for me to impact and help out my teammates or if there was a good chance Brody would get on the end of it if I left him. It was a game full of decisions.
How'd you go fatigue-wise? Keep up with him?
Yeah, no, I was okay. He's probably quicker than me, but in terms of if we had a marathon off, I reckon it would be relatively close.
Would you like to have a marathon off with him?
I'm not sure. No, I definitely wouldn't want to do a 100 meter sprint, but as the game got longer and into it, it seemed like we're more even. But he is, and most people are a fair bit quicker than me.
So it's not a role that you've done. So you're playing against one of the best rucks in the comp and you've got to basically tag him. You've throughout the week, got to try and create and help and be a threat offensively and defensively for your team. When that's sort of taken away from you, you've just got that one narrow focus role, did it make it easier for you or was it difficult because it was just so foreign?
It was more difficult. I've played 115, I think, games, and that's the first time I've played such a negative role. Negative not in a bad way. It does have some bad connotations to that word. But, and it was, I mean, I'm not, selfish point of view, I'm glad that I've been able to do something to learn for next year, and it'll make my game a lot better going on, and was ideally supposed to help the team, but it still lost by 20 points, but... I think I did the role pretty well. It did get a mark at the end, and I was quite disappointed with that and didn't put my hands up on the mark, but that was how I showed my disappointment in my actions.
But the dilemma, Maxi, is if a lot of players, and Daniel's probably been, if you do this sort of negative role well,
yes,
you're going to do it again. And you don't want that.
It's like being a good 12th man.
You want to stink.
You do not want that.
I think my one out is that I'm a ruckman, so it's so foreign.
So it's Brody only. Don't start telling. You'll be, what's the young Sydney kid?
It might not happen next time I play Brody now that I know, because I've watched him so closely, I know
what he does
and how I can put in my sort of attack from there. So, look, it was a great learning curve, and I'm not sure if we would have done it if we were sitting fifth on the ladder or whatnot, but it was a great learning curve and I enjoyed it.
Can you tell me what's going on in Angus Brayshaw's head? He warms up in the helmet. He doesn't start with it. He forgets it. And all of a sudden the runner comes out or someone comes out and says, here. He goes, no, I don't want it. And all of a sudden he's wearing it. What's going on with the Brayshaw helmet situation? Was it the haircut?
Showed the haircut off.
It was pretty sharp.
Just to show how much I was concentrating on my role, I didn't notice he wasn't wearing a helmet early on.
Neither did he, I think, at one stage.
I asked him, and the rumour is that he lost it. Which is phenomenal. How he
from the warm-up?
Yeah, he lost it. Well, he didn't lose it. But he always takes it on and off, always. So when he gets to the bench, he takes it off, gives it to the trainer.
Yeah.
When he's about to come on, the trainer cools it down a bit and gives it back, because it's bloody hot under there. Mm. So he obviously would have had a time where he just gave it to the trainer, just to free it up a little bit, and then the trainer had misplaced it. And then they found it, obviously, 5 minutes into the first quarter, and he said, don't worry about it, and then put it back on. So, I mean... It looks quite funny. Like, first time we've seen Angus Brayshaw, and we all realise he's got a real rude haircut.
Really rude haircut.
But, I mean, he was able to play footy still. And
I'd love to see Big Max in a helmet.
I was going to wear the dowel black boots on the weekend because I was tagging and pull my socks up and get a helmet on and just a real dowel roll. Good.
The hilarious bit about the Brayshaw thing, instantly the commentary was, oh, this is a statement, you know, frustrated season, he's chucked the helmet away, look at this. And then it's like, oh. He's got it back on.
It's ruined everything.
All the commentators, oh, this is, something new.
It was an extremely fresh haircut. It was the day before.
I reckon there's an element of just, I want to show this off.
I thought that's what it was about, but he claims that someone else had misplaced it. And I thought people would have two of them as well, wouldn't you?
You two helmets?
Yeah.
You want to have a spare sitting around somewhere.
It's not going with two boots. you want to take a backup pair of boots.
Well, that's true. You need to start with two boots.
Yeah.
The second pair's handy.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was unusual because I was watching and I thought, and he looked really confident. It didn't look like it was affecting the way he was playing. I thought, oh, maybe.
Well, he trains without it, so that's why I wasn't as surprised when I didn't catch my eye when I didn't see him without the helmet because it's. He doesn't wear it Monday to Friday. He doesn't wear it at lunch.
Main session, contact training.
No, it doesn't wear it.
Doesn't wear it?
No.
Right. So what's the premise of the Saturday wear or the weekend wear?
Mum, maybe.
Years of concussion.
Yeah. Well, yeah, but you can get hit at training too, is what I'm saying. Main session, you get hit and collision. Not so much getting hit, but collisions.
I would have left it on if I was him with that do.
It's normally pretty conservative. That's a bit out there for him, isn't it? On far as do's go. Like it's a Clayton Oliver sort of region.
First time he shaved it down to that sort of length.
Yeah.
So he's got a great hairline. He's going to have it for a long time. And you can do what you want, I suppose, when you have that sort of.
Well, that's true.
Line. Some are lucky.
Some are lucky.
Clayton's hair's a new level this year.
But do you find that people don't mind as much of rude haircuts because there's so many?
Yeah, oh, totally. Yeah. And all the young players are doing similar sort of mohawk thing. Yeah, we don't really blink.
It's not the short back and sides anymore. It's the short sides.
Guelphy was good this year when he went blonde out of the blue.
Yeah.
That was the best sort of
Proxide blondes always. I mean, when Watsy did it, everyone just loved it, didn't they?
Yeah.
When Watsy went proxide.
Like Macaulay Culkin out of Home Alone.
Yes. Yes, so a lot of blonde activity in the Bombers these days. They lose the bit on the wheel.
Oh, that's right.
They spin the wheel and they get the peroxide your hair. You can pay 50 not to do it, but they somehow, some reason, Big Maxi choose to peroxide the hair instead of just paying the 50 to get out of it.
Yeah, well, Angus was a spin of the wheel, hence why the head got shaved.
Oh, is that right?
Yes. Really? The latest one.
Yeah.
What's on the wheel?
There's actually a good one coming up. one of our young players is spun. He's got to call up a radio show, so I'll get him to call up the RSN.
1-300-652-927 is the number to call. Like to get him involved.
You've done something wrong to get the spin?
Is that not necessarily. It can be just a poor Instagram as well. So don't worry.
Oh, yeah. So, but there's an issue. Yeah. It's not just
there's an issue.
Jimmy walks in, oh, no, you now.
Yeah. And his would have been, knowing Angus, would have been most likely would have been a poor Instagram as well. there's also, I mean, I don't like making light of actual punishments.
Yeah.
Like, so turning up late or something like that, I don't actually really like making light of that. So it's more the other stuff. There's a good one called Palmer Gooner. Braden Proust still lives in Nanagoon and drives to train every day.
And
there's a punishment if you spin it. You have to go down to Nanagoon and have a Palmer with Brucey at the pub.
That's gold.
Palmer Gooner. That's brilliant.
So that's,
I don't know what's better, living out at Nanagoon and travelling in every day or the Palmer Gooner itself.
Oh, I think you'd almost hope for the Palmer Gooner every now and then just to get out of town. Get that rural feel at Nanagoon.
That's crazy. It's an hour drive. Well, that's without traffic.
That's fair. Have you ever done that good?
No, he's living at the in-laws, so it's it gets worse.
Oh, boy. What's Proust? Come on.
He doesn't need that in his life. Who was the last person to get out to the goon?
Well, Christian Petracca has recently got it. Hasn't gone yet, but you have to take the number above and the number below, so Jordan Lewis has to go, which is quite funny.
Oh, brilliant. Yes.
Which is quite funny how Lewis has been brought into that.
Take a DML out there as well.
Yeah, it suits him now to go in pub, doesn't it? He actually tried to arrange a cashie. So he can go down there for a reason.
That does not surprise me.
That's brilliant.
With his fake glasses on as well, with his clear lenses.
That is brilliant. Tried to organise a cashie. That is awesome stuff. Good on him. That's smart play, by the way. Maximise your time. That's brilliant. Hey, just on Christian Petracca, he's best mates with Ben Simmons, and Big Ben was in the rooms on the weekend. Just from a reference perspective for us, how does he eye level with you? Where is he? How big is he?
I'd steer clear, one, because I just like to do my own thing on footy day and on footy day. It's quite basic.
footy day.
And it's footy day.
Yeah, and he seemed like my size from afar. Like, he might be a little bit taller. Really? I'm probably better from the three-point line.
You actually are.
You got a better jumper?
Even the free throw line.
Is he a better set shot?
Yeah, actually, probably. But Yeah, Track always talks about. He's getting some horrible media at the moment.
It's shocking.
It's ridiculous.
Yeah. Seems like a great person, and Track talks about him quite well. So, yeah.
The negativity makes no sense.
It doesn't.
And we're very keen to chop people
down.
Why
do we always do that?
I don't know.
Tall poppy.
Both 208, just by the way, I've just been told. R&D have just done some research
for
us.
Ben Simmons, a point guard at 208.
208. So, for our listeners, think of the size of Max Gorn. You think, bloody hell, he's a massive dude. Ben Simmons is running the floor and running the point at 208.
I'd be a centre, wouldn't I? There's probably not much else I could do.
Baby hooking.
Yeah. I'll just get the rebound. That's all I'll do.
Just box out. Max Gorn is with us. So round 21 was no good. Round 22 is a chance. Friday night.
Against Friday Night Lights.
Sydney. Friday Night Lights against Sydney at the MCG. The faithful will be out there. Night footy at the MCG compared to night footy elsewhere, like particularly under the roof at Marvel Stadium. How different is it, Max? Obviously, the conditions make it ace. Depending on what's happening with the weather, affects things. But is it different in a preparation sense, or is it the same?
Good question. We don't play many Saturday night games. So we had two in a row at Marvel a couple of weeks ago. On the first one, I did absolutely nothing during the day. Got really bored, and then was in a bad mood come game day, come game time. So I tried to change that up. The next week, I went and watched local footy. I went and watched the old Ormond boys play Marcelin. Got a win, potentially going up to B-grade Ormond, which has been a long time coming. And I enjoyed that a lot more. So you got to make sure you fill your day. In terms of the actual game, I think MCG just gets a tiny bit dewier.
Yep.
Obviously, with the with the weather coming in. So that's all I can really give you with that question.
So is that different to when you go into state and play a night game?
It depends. So Gabba, obviously, is very wet.
Yep.
Darwin is very wet. So they're two teams. We normally play a lot of night games, but Adelaide Oval is normally brilliant, normally great conditions. So.
But even the way you fill your day, do you do it differently? Obviously, you're not home, but do you do it differently? The format of your day is different to when it is at home and you're playing night games?
It is a little bit because I tend to wake up a lot earlier at home.
Right.
I'm usually 6 a.m. no matter what and sleep until 7.
Yep.
When I'm in a hotel, you just, for some reason, you can get to late. You can get to 9 o'clock. You can really stay in bed.
Darkness.
So.
If you get a dark hotel, there's block nothing out blinds. Down, block it out. No one else in the bed next to you. Just,
So it's a big day in night game when you wake up at 6.
Yeah.
You do get a nap in there at some point.
I was going to say.
Which is pretty important.
Naps are very important.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah,
but critical. Some of the players, like Clayton, won't get up till 1.
Oh, I
which
love
is phenomenal.
That.
Wow. Yeah.
That is spectacular.
He's about to go. He's going overseas with three boys in the off season. And he religiously gets up at 1, 2 o'clock in the afternoon. He's going to ruin their trips.
Can't be done.
There'll be no sightseeing.
He'll be ruining their trips.
Well, you don't want to go with him anywhere.
No.
You get home at 6. You can't. You probably will sleep at 1, won't you?
It's all right if you're going to Ibiza and it doesn't start till midnight. Yeah.
Like, but the trip will be, they'll go out for dinner and then they'll go home and they'll play the PlayStation they brought over from Australia. And they'll play their Australian mates on PlayStation to all hours in the night. He actually, we went to the Brownlow together last year. Yes. One night, stay at Crown Casino Brownlow. Mm. I've got my suit on ready to go into his room, ready to go down to him, in his jocks playing FIFA that he brought in. He brought his PlayStation in, Brownlow night. checking out at 10 o'clock the next morning, and you're busy all night. You've thought to bring your PlayStation, and he found time.
Oh, that's extraordinary. The youth of today.
He's a whisperer for tomorrow.
He's not a big beer drinker either. He's
just a gamer. Everyone's a gamer now.
Gamer.
You're almost the odd one out.
What's the game of choice?
Come Mad Monday, you're almost the odd one out if you want to go have a beer. Everyone else is having an Xbox party.
Well, I did see the other week, Callan Ward on the gram, they had a big FIFA day.
Yeah.
Well, they got a couple of FIFA days, but it was day one of the FIFA extravaganza, and they all kitted up, went to his place or someone's place, and had this playoff. The whole day of playoffs.
Yep.
Like, it's big business, the gaming industry within the club land.
It's huge. The boys have an NBA league where they all play each other, and it's crazy.
I can't have it. Sorry.
Nah. Well, you can win $4 million if you win the world champs now, so I might look into it.
I can have it, yeah. I'm okay with it. Just haven't got time for it.
Yeah, no. Not for me.
You'd be a board game sort of man, wouldn't you? Man?
Well, we do have a board game group. every day off, we tend to go into this one in the city, which is quite good. But we... I also have a little bit of gaming in me, but only like single player. Go win Wimbledon on Tennis Pro. Or I've actually got the Tour de France game, which is as exciting as it sounds.
So how does that work?
You press A to sprint, and that's basically it.
Just goes sprinting up a hill,
yeah, and there's no fast forward in the stage.
There's more to it than that. You've got there's tactics and team, and it's pretty cool if you've got your head around it. I quite like that game.
Me too. Yeah, it's not bad.
For a while now.
Don't worry, I've just talked it down. I've got all four seasons. So. And clocked them.
Are you in charge of your team? So you got six, right? Or, do you know what I mean?
Yeah, you got eight riders, and you can choose which one you want to be in control of, and the other seven are in the palm of your hand.
Wow.
It's like Palmaguna.
Things you do. Now, back to football.
Yep.
You've gone from Brodie Grundy to Hayden McLean, but you have a little insight into this unknown Sydney person.
Yeah, I was developing my ruck coach skills down at Sandy Dragons for a couple of years, and it was when Hayden McLean was there. He was in every ruck thing I did. He was the tall forward ruck at that time, and I think he's still aiming to be a tall forward ruck, but he's playing in the ruck at the moment and doing a great job. Played a really good game on Mumford the other day when they only lost by a couple of points, and himself and Alir seem to be the ruck combination at the moment, and Reed at times, and they've been getting away with playing like those three in the ruck, and they're doing quite well. So they've still got two guys in the kneeful that I wouldn't be surprised if one of them comes in, and Noel, who was their mature age
recruit mid-season.
So I'll play it by ear, but I've got a rough idea of what Hayden can bring because I was holding the ruck bag in those centre bounces.
Any tricks? Do you give too much away, or how do you coach a young ruckman?
I'm massive when I was coaching in terms of just you got to be an absolute competitor in there. So that I now know is what Hayden can bring. So you don't want a timid ruckman, and the best player to verse in a centre bounce is a timid ruck. So I make sure that that's out of them before they get out there on the ground. And I feel like I did it. I got one drafted to Melbourne, Lockie Filipovic, who's not here anymore, but I did my job. I got him drafted. and then once I got him drafted, then I started not coaching him. He's trying to destroy his career. So
what's the point of having him with me? No threats.
Do you ruck like you play, Max? Because it's an interesting one. Been doing a little bit of coaching the last little bit as well, and it's sort of nothing like when I played. Are you technical? Do you just go, nah, have a crack? What is it?
Yeah, when you're coaching and get caught in having to explain absolutely everything, which is not how you play, is it? So,
breaks it down.
So I've had some different ruck coaches in my time, and Greg Stafford, who's been on for the last sort of 5 years, he has a genuine crack at ruck training. So he tries to put you on your ass, and he goes home and he can't walk. Like he goes pretty hard, and it's developed me as a ruckman. Yeah. So that's what I try and take when I do these Sandy Dragon stuff, and if I do go into ruck coaching. I might need a couple of hip replacements and knee surgeries, but that's what I'll be into.
Well, we'll see what he does this week. Your man, the master and the apprentice, we like to call that sort of scenario. How would you know about Bluey Adams?
Six Flags.
He passed away yesterday, which is very sad news for the Melbourne Football Club and all, obviously, the family and football in general, because Six Flags.
Yeah, and a very successful era for the club. I think it was 8 grand finals as well. And I mean, it's just amazing to think that someone can play in that many premierships, and especially where the game is at now, apart from Hawthorn, there's almost no teams that can win two in a decade. So it's sad. It's sad news, and we'll work out this week what we're going to do. And one of the greats of the club.
Are you in touch with a lot of the past history of the club, Max? We were talking about this before, weren't we? About young players coming in and not so much knowing the history of the club, or you know, wanting to delve right into it.
I do love it. It helps. I wrote a column early last year on Nathan Jones potentially being one of the greatest Melbourne players, and I had to do my research to make that sort of statement. So I had a look at all things Melbourne, and I'm also interested in our previous most successful era, which is the Norm Smith era, and obviously the curse that potentially has happened since then, because we haven't won the grand final since Norm Smith got the Raspberry Sarre. So. Yeah, I'm very interested in all the guys who played under Neil Danaher, which is the most recent era, because they're all so close, yet they didn't win anything, but they're all really, really close, and they're probably brought together by Neil and Jim Steins and that sort of crew, so you do take a bit of an interest. And who wears your number as well.
Yeah, definitely.
That Melbourne team of the 50s, like, ridiculous. We talk about Hawthorn and Brisbane and the Collingwood four-peat in 27-30, but that Melbourne team must have been something else. 55, 56, 57. Had a spell in 58. Oh. Backed it up in 59 and 60. So it's five out of six they won.
Lost the granny in 58.
Lost the 58 one, of course, yes. And then won 64 as well.
Extraordinary.
So five out of six with a loss. Six grand finals.
The guys have done well to hold on to the 64, the ones who played in those late ones in the 50s.
Yeah.
Wouldn't have been great to play in that era.
Oh.
Anyone would have been a good one, as far as I'm concerned. Five out of six would have been nice. Six out of nine would have been outstanding. It's not going to happen for you this year, Maxie, but you get a chance to finish off strong with Sydney on Friday night, and then round 23 to wrap it all up next week. We thank you for being a part of Inner Sanctum this year. Hopefully we get a chance to see you through the spring.
Is that the last one?
It's the last Inner Sanctum. You're done.
It's sad, isn't it?
Emotional.
Doesn't mean you're done with us, but just that little segment, you're done.
I will be invited back.
We will hopefully get you back a few times in the spring as well if you're
horse
up
racing.
Yeah. I can do a Rugby World Cup special from Japan.
That's it. There you go.
I
think I might be able to potentially get in a game.
Oh, really?
Ooh. Maybe All Blacks v Springboks.
So the trip is planned, which is the not the sad part of not being the finals, but where are you going?
Normally we get to book Bali in February, but last couple of years we've been playing finals, so this year we had to book a little bit later. But no, I'm going to watch the Volta in Spain.
Best ever.
I've got about three or four stages in me, and I'm going to ride up the Tourmalet, which is the most famous climb on the tour.
Brilliant.
That's awesome.
That's what I'm looking forward to the most. But then I might sneak in a Rugby World Cup down.
No, that works.
On Wednesday morning, it was dedicated to the Collingwood Footy Club. Taylor Adams is in the studio on this occasion. He comes off a 23 disposal game against the Demons from the weekend. The Magpies will travel to Adelaide this weekend to take on the Crows. They're still hopeful and pushing for a top four spot with their final two games. He spoke to Daniel Harford, Sherelle McMahon and Scotty Gullen.
You ditched this a couple of weeks ago. You were busy. You had stuff on. You couldn't make it, which we were disappointed about. But it's been a month.
It's been a month, yeah. A long month. What's happened?
Well, we were worried because you got injured in that time and there was fears. Oh, no, he's done it again. That they're saying it's a hammy, but we don't believe him because we don't believe him. But thankfully it was.
It was. It was a little niggly. It was really strange, actually. So I played that one game back after missing 11-odd games and copped a big hit against the Giants in my right hip, and my whole right side of my body sort of seized up a little bit, and I was getting a little bit of hamstring referral pain. So it wasn't like, it was really strange. I was had most of my strength, and I was able to run at about 80%. But as soon as I went faster than that, I started getting these zaps down my leg, and
it's not ideal.
Yeah, and that was seriously 5 hours before the game. So I woke up on Friday morning expecting to play, and did a fitness test at about 1 o'clock, and it was ruled out then.
That's not the first time that's happened this year, is it? That you kind of were very confident about playing, and then very close to the game, you've had to withdraw for different reasons. That must be tough. Is that tough to that happen so late?
It is. It's really difficult. It was sort of a blessing in disguise to some degree, because I was really, really sore, my back and my hip. So the right decision was to not play, and that's obviously the more difficult decision to make. But by the time it got to 1:30, 2 o'clock in the afternoon, I was exhausted. I hadn't slept properly. I'd been up to see the physios at 7:30 in the morning because I was really worried about it, and then went home, thought I was okay, then went back into the club to do a fitness test. So I hadn't prepared for the game as well as I usually would have. So to be ruled out at that point, I was bittersweet.
Yeah.
Yeah. I felt like it was the right move.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It would be annoying that, because you're ready to roll and then all of a sudden this thing comes along late and gives you the Jimmy Brits. That's no good, but it would be more annoying if you're out of contract and no money left. You have signed a 5-year extension, Tobes. Since we saw you, you've signed a 5-year deal. This must be very pleasing.
5 years, yeah. So I'm locked into the club until I'm 31 or 32.
You must like the place.
I do. I really enjoy the place. It was a pretty easy decision for me. Once I knew I was out of contract end of this year, we started having the conversation with the footy club throughout the year last year, and sort of tapered off towards the end of the year, obviously, with finals and, you know, the stuff happening throughout September and October. It was nice to have it. We sort of agreed to it before Christmas and had to just tweak a few things leading up to throughout this year. And, I'm wrapped. It's obviously the place I want to be. I love the joint, love my teammates, love my coaching staff, and, couldn't see myself anywhere.
$8 million, Scotty. $8 million.
What's the phone call like when your manager rings you and go, I've got five?
Yeah.
Because five's a lot.
Five's a lot.
Yeah. Because I can imagine you go, I want to stay there, give me the longest possible. And you're probably, I don't know where this, you're probably thinking three's a good effort and we'll see how we go.
Yeah, well, there was negotiation. No, we sort of thought, my view was I wanted to lock myself in long term.
Yeah.
Because there's no way I'm going anywhere else. So it wasn't like I was asking for extraordinary amounts of money. Mm. And I was happy to be paid fairly so that we could create the best list that we possibly can have. And
so you take a little bit of a cut, but you get the 5 years.
I think on an open market, most players would go out there and, there might be teams lower down the ladder that would pay more for players.
They have to.
They have to, yeah. And that was something that, didn't even cross my mind, to be honest. I never thought about that because I wouldn't have left. So I didn't tell the club that until...
They didn't know that.
Leverage.
How involved are you in that process? Obviously, you've got a manager who takes care of the nitty-gritty. Is it? Do you get updated on how things are going, or is it? Do you like to leave it alone?
I sort of pushed it to the side throughout when we were playing, just because it didn't really matter to me at that point in time. This manager, Ned Guy, I've known him for a few years now, and he's only been at the club for... I think 2 years, but I've known him for a lot longer than that. We had open dialogue between just he and I, but most of it goes through your manager. There's a lot of, your manager has much more of an understanding of what you're worth and what looks good in a contract. And I put all my faith in him to get me the fairest deal possible.
So now you can plan buying the boat and the holiday house and you can just start spending.
Invest.
Property, or are you a shares man?
Property at this stage.
How many you got?
I've got two at the moment. One I've just renovated, so it's I'm broke.
Well, 5 years.
Yeah, 5 years.
I think that'll help you get out.
Is that like renovating to keep it or renovating?
Yeah, we're living in it now.
Oh, right.
So it was, that was
cool.
Yeah, it was a bit of an experience.
Yeah.
Really, really fun. But it took probably 11 months.
Now, it's full on.
Scotty and I were talking before about perhaps going on the block and
yes.
and being really capable at ringing people to come and fix stuff and not actually doing anything ourselves. What's your role in the renovation? Are you the ringer or the fixer?
I'm not very handy.
So, you're on the phone.
Yeah, I'm on the phone most of the time.
Right. Well, you're on the field most of the time when you're out there for the Pies doing good things again. Just looking at the ladder and watching the teams in the last couple of weeks, I've been thinking about you and the Magpies. Chances are, now there are obviously, permutation that can take place. Top four might be out of the question, might be off the table if things keep rolling the way they're rolling at the moment. Does that give you the Jimmy Brits? Are you a bit annoyed about that?
That's news to me.
Well, so you're a game behind Richmond, and they've got West Coast this week, which would be big.
Yep.
And you've got Adelaide, which will also be quite significant on Saturday.
Yep.
And the other teams are two games in front of you. So you're not going to catch them. Richmond's your only chance to catch for a top four spot.
Yep.
Yeah, they need to lose one.
Yeah. But, I think not really. Obviously, we want to finish top four. But, we put ourselves in a position where we're a game behind top four position and we've got two games left. So all we can do is go out there and win this weekend and then back it up the next week and try to get the next 8 points. I think the pleasing thing for us is the last 2 weeks we've sort of started to play the way we wanted to play and played throughout the first half of the season. I think against any team, we're really competitive when we do that.
What's returned? Is it style or pressure? What sort of has come back? in the last couple of weeks that you feel good about?
Combination of things. Our contest and pressure on the ball is back to where it was on the weekend. I think our pressure number was almost a record for us for this year.
This is by the numbers. Can you explain that to us, please?
It's a very high number.
So pressure number, to those who don't understand it, how do they measure it?
So we basically get a number at quarter time, half time, three quarter time. It goes on a scale of 0 to 300 or something. Yeah. And anything around 200 is really good.
183 is the league average.
Yeah, so we aim for 200. And our number, I think, at quarter time, by memory, and I've only heard this on game day, was 229.
Wow. Oh, boy.
Or half time.
So how is it measured? It's tackling.
And this is a team measurement.
Yeah, there's points for individuals and there's points as a team. So it's measured basically by how much pressure is put on an individual at any given point. So if they keep marking the ball around and uncontested marks, your number will be close to zero.
Okay, yeah.
But if the ball is, you know, in transition, there's a lot of turnovers, there's a lot of tackles, a lot of pressure, a lot of errant kicks, that sort of thing, then your pressure number goes through the roof.
How do your boffins watch the footy and actually... I reckon they make it up.
Well, the team of champion don't make anything
How many people are watching going, hang on, that's a pressure point, pressure point, pressure point.
I don't know how they do it.
Hang on.
I don't know how they do it.
I reckon some bloke watches and go, that's a pretty pressure-ish quarter. I'll give him 203.
It's not how it works, but it has come back for the Magpies. And I imagine, actually, the game was interesting on the weekend because it wasn't an overly attractive game, but you dominated pretty much midway, earlier than second term was on your terms. And then you let them kick four late when the game was over. You let them kick four in the last quarter. What does Bucks say about that? Considering the game was in control and you got it on your terms, but you need to sort of let it slip late. What does he say about that leading into a finals campaign?
Yeah, I think our leaders were probably more disappointed than what Bucks was. And we sort of spoke about that Monday morning first thing and addressed that as a leadership group. And then we decided on what way we wanted to review the game. And the conclusion we came to was to show edits of us doing it really well. So basically keeping Melbourne scoreless for almost two quarters and then and then White broke down in the last quarter and we were completely out of shape, guys out of role and our lack of pressure on the ball. So they scored against us by doing things we knew they were gonna do, try to get the ball through the corridor and we went away from what was working for the first three quarters and it's funny how it works. They scored against us.
So was it pretty obvious for you when you looking at the reviews and people were like, totally weren't doing what we were doing for the first three quarters?
Yeah, it's so easy to see, especially with behind the goals vision. There's absolutely nowhere to hide, and it's a great learning tool. It's self-explanatory because the guys know the game plan so well, and you kind of know when you're out there, when you're out of position, and it almost like a snowball effect. When someone's out of position, then drag someone else out, then someone else out, and then all of a sudden you're doing extra work, and you're so fatigued that it just compounds the issue.
And why does it happen? I mean, I'm coaching at the moment with the Melbourne Vixens, and sometimes, you know, we come off and we think, you know what, we weren't doing what we'd agreed that we would do. And it's an interesting mentality because you know what it is. You've been doing it for three quarters. What shifts do you think in the mind of an athlete when you stop doing the things that you know you should be doing?
Yeah, well, I think it probably got to the 10 or 15 minute mark and we kind of put the cue in the rack a little bit. When you sort of go into self-preservation mode and think, we had a big game next week on the road and I don't want to hurt myself. Mm. Maybe that's something that might cross the mind of players.
Think you got the job done?
That sort of mentality, which is not great, and that's why we addressed it first thing Monday.
That's how I started game, Scotty. It's a big game next week, don't hurt myself.
Already thinking about it.
Don't get too
out of trouble.
Yeah, talk about the review, though, the review process. You said before that you thought about, from a leadership perspective, how you wanted to review it. Yep. Do you take charge of that? Do you do the edits? How does that work?
Yeah. So we meet with Maxie, Nick Maxwell, on a Monday morning, the five of us, plus an emerging leader. This week it was Braden Maynard, which is always quite interesting. So then we spend half an hour with him and we sort of give our thoughts on the game and just discuss what we thought as players being out there. Usually there's a lot of dialogue that goes on via text messages or when we do recovery and that sort of stuff.
Yep.
immediately after the game or on the Sunday following the game. So, you know, we come to that meeting with a fair bit of knowledge, and we're sort of all on the same page. Then we go and take that to Bucks, and we have a chat with Bucks, and he sort of gives his feedback and what the coaches thought, and we sort of, yeah, combine what we felt out there and come up with the best way to review the game, keeping it as short and pointy as possible, and making sure that we don't, you know, try to hit 10 or 15 points. It's just three or four things, and make sure that we take the learnings from that and implement it in training.
So do you guys ever run those sessions out the front, talking through this, boys, this is what we did the rather than Bucks?
Probably more than half the time, yeah.
Really?
Yeah, Bucks is always up there doing something. Like, he'll present something. Not always, but 85% of the time.
Yeah.
But it might only take him 5 minutes. The rest of the time, it's either done by someone from the leadership group or one of those emerging leaders, like a Braden Maynard.
Like a Braden Maynard, who's clearly a loose dude. What's Braden bringing?
Oh, he just sees the game differently, and I love it. He's one of the players that's matured most that I've seen in my time at a footy club, and he plays like that now. Like, he's a real leader out on the footy field, and he's relied upon by his teammates. But if you said that to me 4 years ago, 5 years ago, when he first walked into the club, I would have laughed at you because he was just a hooligan.
But when you say that he's a hooligan, I like that. When he looks at it differently, do you enjoy that as a leadership group?
Yeah, it's
because
great.
It's a different kind of aspect on things?
Yeah, I think that what I'm trying to refer to there is just like his passion. And he just sort of says it how it is, rather than like
there's no filter,
and he doesn't try to make it sound like he's a coach. It's just like this is what I saw. This is what I thought.
That bloke shouldn't have done that.
So it's great to have players like that. And we've got a few of those guys in our both leadership group and emerging leaders group that bring a different style of learning to the team.
So after your meeting with Maxi, you go to Bucks. Bucks will say, because, you know, there's tactics, as the AFLW Coach of the Year will tell you.
Yes.
So Bucks will go, I'm going to spray him today, I've had enough. And you'll go, okay, we agree. Or you go, I think these blokes need a whack or cuddle. Do you know what I mean?
But
are you aware of which way he might approach it?
Yeah, but I've never heard it. He would never say that.
Yeah.
I'd love if he said that.
I've never heard those words come out of his mouth. No, it's more like it's more this is what worked, this is what didn't work, now let's see the evidence of that.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's methodical. It's not like there's no emotion in it when it gets to Monday.
Stuff getting chucked and
chairs being thrown.
Blighty, lights off, all that sort of stuff.
We've got to work out, you know, when you balance up how the forward line was structured, which was really, you know, Coxie out, Roughhead in, does that balance mean that we maintain some semblance of role? Does it mean that Chequers was able to play his natural game, which popped him a little bit more? You know, well, it's only a four-quarter sample size, but we're working out that. But Chequers was good, you know, really strong aerial, runs all day, very hard to defend.
Chequers. We love Chequers. 7:23 on a Wednesday morning. Brady Myercheck, Nathan Buckley referring to there after his four snags against the Demons on the weekend, which was enough to get the Pies over the line. They head to Adelaide this week on Saturday at the Adelaide Oval. Very interesting affair that's going to be. Taylor Adams has joined us in the inner sanctum of the Magpies on the Breakfast Club. That forward line mix is changing a little bit just with personnel.
Yeah.
Tay, when you're working further up the field and you're seeing those new faces who perhaps don't have the synergy and chemistry of your regular six, does it make you think about what you have to do?
Not necessarily. I think, yeah, we definitely had a different look in our forward line on the weekend, but we always, our structure didn't really change too much, and that was the whole purpose of putting Ruffy down there.
Yep.
We could have, you know, easily asked a Will Hoskin-Elliott or a Jeremy Elliott to try to play a little bit taller and sort of fill the hole that Coxie left. But then
it would be funny asking Jamie Elliott to play Mason Cox role.
Yeah, it would be funny, but
he's about 3 foot shorter.
He is, but surprisingly very good in the air.
Yes,
for his
size.
Yeah.
Small word he is.
It didn't feel any different to me. you ask Jordan Ruffhead that question and he'll answer it differently, because completely different role playing, that outlet, sort of that guy that puts his hand up and just kick it on my head sort of set up, whereas, you know, he's used to jumping into guys' backs. So, but we had Steel Side Bottom down there. He's played last couple of weeks as a smaller forward and wing role, and he's played two great games. Obviously, we'd like to have Geordie and Jaden out there, but, we're going to go without them for another week at least.
How is Jaden coming along?
Good. Yeah,
physically. And mentally, I suppose.
Is he back from his holiday that he got in trouble for having a break?
He's back. Yeah, that was very funny. training really hard. I said to him the other day that you'd have to be the fittest bloke in the AFL right now, because he's been getting absolutely flogged.
Is he?
He's got 2 weeks left. I think he's got one more really big session to get through. And then his last week leading into the finals, and that bye before the finals, will be more of a taper-off week, make sure that he's mentally and physically fresh.
Now, the Crows, what's it like for a midfielder? You're coming up... The Crouch brothers are ball magnets, basically. Mm. How do you look going into a matchup against two guys who are just... You know, you play with players. They just get the ball. They're one of those. What's your mindset coming up against that type of midfield?
Yeah, they're funny. Like, you look at, obviously, Tom Mitchell from last year.
Yeah.
The way we'll approach it, and we haven't had our meetings or anything yet, obviously there's one way to go is with a tag and try to completely negate their influence on the game.
Which you don't historically do much.
I don't think many teams are going that way necessarily. The other way is just to try to limit their impact on the game. So they might still get their 30 touches, but... You know, it's all the score involvements, inside 50s, you know, them hitting the score with themselves, all that sort of stuff you sort of want to take away from them. So making sure you keep them in tight in the contest and don't allow their spread to really impact the game.
But because they're so good at ball-ups and throw-ins, would you stay closer to them rather than... Yeah,
definitely. And we did that with Clayton Oliver on the weekend, who is one of the better clearance players in the game. Especially, you know, working with two good ruckmen, Sam Jacobs and Maxi Gawn, you've got to be really wary of those sort of players. And Pendles did the job on Clayton Oliver on the weekend and did a really good job around stoppage and was able to stop his influence, because, you know, you give someone like that four or five clearances in the first quarter and you never know, it could lead to 20.
We had Big Maxi in here yesterday from the D's, who was tagging Brody. I imagine you probably didn't work on that in the build-up.
Max Gawn was going to. Did you even know that?
Max Gawn was going to tag Brody. Like, he tagged him.
I did not know that.
He tagged him.
That is incredible.
We thought so. It was.
Did Brody know that?
That was not mentioned. That's the first time I've heard of that.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Tagged him.
Wow, okay, well...
The two best...
He said Brody didn't say much.
Does that mean he didn't...
Brody doesn't say much.
Didn't notice, or what?
Well, Ruckman's the last, sort of the last role in a team, maybe apart from fullback or full forward, where the legitimate one-on-one contest around the ground happens.
Yeah.
All midfielders and even high backs and high forwards and wingers, you almost play on four or five blokes throughout the day.
Mm.
It's not like, all right, I'm starting next to Clayton Oliver today, I'm not going to leave your side. And every single time the ball goes, you know, near one of us, we're going to be in each other's back pocket. Whereas Ruckman, you sort of do have that because of the height difference. It's not like Brody can hand Max Gawn over to me. He'd run me straight to the goal square and take a mark. So you'd
probably miss it, though.
He would admit that.
That's why I say that.
Yeah, so that's interesting. Like, the fact that they called it a tag intrigues me.
Mm.
But yeah, Brody's very good.
Intrigued Max. Yeah.
Well, so is Max. Just quietly. He's a pretty good player.
Really yeah, exactly.
We're surprised about that.
Yeah, we obviously spoke about his influence and trying to
stop him dominating.
Well, Brody did a good job. Yeah.
He just ran around.
You mentioned Geordie before, and Darcy, I was reading the paper today that he'll be back perhaps next week. Are you confident that Geordie will be right for the finals? That everything's okay?
Yeah.
Right.
That's all been cleared up. Yeah, because I know there's been talk about the re-injury, but he's in a good place now, and he's just got to get him to a point where he's not going to break down again.
So it's an interesting dynamic kind of into that first week of finals. A lot of names coming back.
Yeah.
Potentially into the team.
Yeah, you look at, obviously, Stevenson, Moore, DeGoey, you know, Daniel Wells is thereabouts now. He sort of put his hand up in the last fortnight, which is incredible. Obviously our list, you know, touch forward, we're starting to get some health back there, so that it obviously helps.
Mm. Now, it's nice to have your better players out there, but does it raise concerns about their ability to get through a finals campaign, not having that load of work and play?
Yeah, I think that's what I was referring to before in terms of Jordy. We've got to make sure that he's almost bulletproof.
Yeah.
So that's the reason why we won't rush him back. You know, whether it's next week or the first week of finals, whenever he pulls on a Collingwood Guernsey to go out there and play, he will be 100% fit, and there'll be no doubt that he can complete a game of footy.
And Big Mace, what sort of patient is he? How does he go when he's not playing?
I haven't seen him yet. He's been laid up at home. So, yeah, it's a bit of a weird one, wasn't it? Like,
yeah,
poking the eye to end your season's not ideal. But, I think he's doing pretty well. I've spoken to him a couple of times, and I've got to pick up a burger for him this week and take it over to him because he lives around the corner from me. So I said I'd bring him a big Texan burger.
Big Southern Fried Chicken burger. Yeah. Just one. He looks like a man who needs two or three.
Yeah, mate, might be two.
Well, make sure you get yourself fueled up. It's going to be a big game Saturday, 4:35. Check your local guides at the Adelaide Oval when the Pies travel across to take on the Crows. A big one for your boys. Taylor, big one for you. Go get them.
That's been the best of the Inner Sanctum recap for this week. Don't forget you can subscribe to The Breakfast Club on iTunes or on Spotify and you will not miss a moment. And of course, to keep up to date with everything else going on in the world of sport, you can simply head to rsn.net.au.